Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Yeah. So I'm really excited because, you know, you guys get to hear from your pastoral team this week just on all of these things that we've been talking about regarding the Sermon on the Mount. And as Brad's been preaching, kind of the biblical perspective of why we live the Sermon on the Mount, what it means. We get to just share personal testimonies about when we've done it and when we haven't done it, our wins, our fails, you know, and actually how to walk it out and how to live these things in our daily regular lives. And so that's kind of what you've come to today. And for any of you who, you know, Family Sunday is a new thing, I just want to make you feel so comfortable. Screaming children, like, we're all very used to that. We've been doing Family Sunday since the start, and we really believe in it. And especially for those younger kids, you know, they're young. They're two. They're going to move around. They're going to be wiggly, you know. They're going to get up and scream occasionally, and we're going to need to give them breaks in the lobby. But I would encourage you, when you need to give your kid a break, do it. And then just try and come right back in as quickly as you can, because that's what we're trying to train them to do, is how to just be with us seeking the Lord together. And it takes training, and it takes time, and it takes some screaming, and from all parties, including the parents sometimes, we pull out our hair. But we're all used to it, so please don't feel uncomfortable if your kid is loud or whatever. I mean, that's kids, right? So just before we get started with our actual panel, I just want to kind of give a recap of what Brad has talked about so far. We're going to kind of focus on what he's already covered. And, you know, the Sermon on the Mount is 3 whole chapters, but we've only done a small portion. So that's where we're going to be speaking from today. And so just to recap, when I started really actually learning about the Sermon on the Mount, studying the Sermon on the Mount, thinking, okay, like actually realizing this is in the Bible, I guess at the time I had just been trying to like live right for God and be a good person and do the right thing, but kind of having more of a vague understanding of what that means. You know, the Sermon on the Mount really lays out, here is how you walk with Christ. This is how to do it. When you said yes to Jesus, when he came to you and you said yes, he gave you the blueprints for, okay, this is what it means to follow me. Like, you want to follow me, here's what you need to do. Here's what you need to know. This is what it's like. And I think sometimes, you know, we think the Sermon on the Mount is for like the spiritual elite, you know, and like the people who are like really going for it, or like, you know, the ministers, the people that we see on TV. And those people just don't exist. Like, the spiritually elite is not even a real thing. It's a concept that we've just made up in our heads, you know, and when you meet these people, you realize that they're just humans, just like we are, you know, and they have sin struggles just like we do. And they're trying to love the Lord with all their hearts, just like we are, and they make mistakes. And so the Sermon on the Mount is really how we walk out our relationship with Christ. It's our everyday relationship with Christ is the Sermon on the Mount. And I love it because it gives such practical application, you know, to like practically, what can I do to love God more? What can I do to worship him with my life? Not just with my words, my song, but with my life. And I love it because it gives us practicalities, but it also gives us the heart and the mind focus. All of these things that we read about start in our heart and in our mind, and taking those thoughts captive, turning our hearts to the Lord, and then acting out of that. And so we're going to kind of talk about that today. Just on the point of, you know, it's for all of us. When we came to know Christ, the Bible says you have been crucified with Christ. We died to ourselves. And I no longer live, but Christ in me lives. And so when we come to Christ, we are saying, Jesus, my life is not my own anymore. It belongs to you. I want you to be the Lord. I want you to take control. I want you to live every breath, every day for you and with you, right alongside of you. And that verse that kept coming to me as I was thinking about this was just that, therefore now we are no longer an old man, like we're a new creation. The old has gone and the new has come. And this is how we walk it out. This is how we live it out, was the Sermon on the Mount. So just as we move forward, I'm going to kind of review what we've covered so far, because some of you might not have been here. I know I wasn't here every week with Riker being sick and stuff. So just as we, before we get started, I'll give just a little recap here. All right, so the Beatitudes, basically it starts out with, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. And really I see poor in spirit and meekness are really both humility, right? One is humility in our relationship with God, like poor in spirit. I think of it as humility in our relationship with God and meekness as humility in our relationship with each other. Okay? And so humility in our relationship with God, humility in our relationship with each other. Blessed are those who mourn, who feel what God feels, who we decide we're going to partner with you in suffering, like fellowship with Christ in his suffering. And so it's not just being sad about things, but it's partnership with Christ in his sufferings. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And it's almost like the Lord saying, these things, like those first three, it's really, really hard to do. How am I ever going to do that? But if you just hunger and thirst for righteousness, you'll be filled. Like just hunger and thirst, you know, and you'll come after me for these things. Blessed are those who are merciful, who are pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers and those who are persecuted for righteousness or falsely accused. So those are the Beatitudes. And then we started talking about praying, fasting, and giving. And just real quick as a recap on that, prayer is really what everything flows out of. You know, we can't do these things on our own. That's the old man. We aren't those things. We aren't merciful. You know, just in ourselves, we aren't humble, that's for sure. You know, we want what we want. But when we pray and we ask God, oh God, help me, Lord, make me like you. Prayer is our conversation with Christ. It's our relationship with Christ. It's our submission to him. It's our trust in him. It's our leaning on him. And so we talked about prayer. We talked about fasting, giving up food, not eating. But also just not eating, but reaching. Not eating and reaching. Lord, I'm giving up food because I want you. Not just I'm giving up food. That's a wasted day, right? Eat the food. But I'm giving up food because I want more of you. And I want to replace this food that I'm consuming to consume more of you. And then giving, I want to make a differentiation between giving and tithing. We've been doing this with our kids here recently. As they get money, you know, we say, okay, 10% tithe, 10% give, 10% save, and the rest you can spend. It's yours, you know. And there's a difference between tithing and giving. Tithing is our 10% that we give to our church, but the Sermon on the Mount, what it talks about in giving, it's giving to the needy. It's not giving to your church, the body of people, the family that you do life with. It's giving to the needy, and sometimes the needy are within your church, right? But it's over and above. It's that I want a heart that's generous and that says, Lord, my money is yours. What do you want to do with it? And so those are the things that we have talked about. And just after that recap, we're just going to go ahead and start in our panel discussion and get to hear from the pastors of our church. So our first question, describe the stage of life that you were in, and really that most of us were in, when you first started really pursuing these principles with actual real life application. What was the season like around the community? What was your experience? That's the first question.
So I was about, I think I had just turned 20. The community was not really actually the community at that point. It was just a Bible study in Brad's house because he had just bought a house, and it's like, I need to start a Bible study because I have a house. And so, because I'd known Brad for, I guess, since like eighth grade. So when he had the Bible study, I just decided I would go to the Bible study. And that was one of the topics that fairly quickly came up because we had all kind of sort of grown up like with church backgrounds, but we had never really dove into Matthew 5, 6, and 7 from our church backgrounds. And so we were just kind of taken aback by those three chapters. And I remember we just kind of did this verse-by-verse study through it. We went really slow. It took us, I think, like 7 months of trying to look at every little verse and go over it. And I remember we would just be like, okay, meekness. What does meekness even mean? And we'd be like, how can we do meekness this week? And we would try to come up with all these like really wild, interesting what-if scenarios. If you know anything about our community, you know that we will what-if anything to death a lot of times in unreasonable ways. But that's just kind of how we didn't know any other way. And so I remember doing that. It was pretty exciting. I think like the first one with giving was, you know, it's maybe I was making like $80 giving guitar lessons. And so it's like, I mean, $80, I'll give all of my $80 away. Because $80, it didn't really make much of a difference. You know, I couldn't afford anything anyway. So it wasn't really that big of a deal to like, to give it all away. But I remember like, seeing that like in the early days and then needing a job and getting a job almost like in a day kind of a thing. That was just like one of those kind of early ways that the Lord would sort of pay it back. You know, that at least I saw.
What was the question? Sorry. Oh, like being a real Christian. Okay. The year was... No. I remember I think either I was just dating Andy or we just got married and I was working the public school system. There was just this very not nice teacher and it felt like I was like being picked on, like bullied, but by an adult. And then... I was telling Andy, basically trying to get him on my side, like, what can we do to get back at this lady? And I remember Andy goes, go buy her a gift card. I was like, well, now I'm just mad at you. And then and I was like, excuse me? Like, I was thinking, like, something with the tire. But in any case, like, a lot of the stuff, like, she was just coming at me with big words that I didn't know, like, she says something like patronizing. I was like, what does that even mean? She's like, you're doing it right now. I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing. And so I know what other words are, but not that one. And so all to say, like, Andy was like, hey, you know Sermon on the Mount? I was like, yes. And so he was like, you need to love your enemies. I know money is a big factor for you. And I was like, yes. And then so he taught me, like, you need to bless her. And I go, I can pray for her. And then she goes, but that doesn't hurt as much as the gift card. And so we kind of one up it a bit. And so I gave her the gift card to a place that she likes, not like somewhere where she doesn't like, because that. So I gave it into, you know, I wrote a card and I gave her the card and everything, because I knew, like, if I were to talk to her face-to-face, it probably wouldn't do so much. But that was my first real application of doing something totally against the flesh. But as you continue to exercise that muscle, it gets better. Just to say, if you get a gift card from me, I'm not mad at you. But that was one of my real-life application, guys.
Well, and for me, is in a very similar situation to Luke. I actually was living with Brad in the house that he had just bought, and so, you know, was involved in the Bible study and everything, and again, about 19, 20 years old. And, you know, I just remember, like that's, I gave my life to the Lord when I was, when I was like 14, 15 years old, and... but I, you know, that point that, you know, we really started digging into the Sermon on the Mount and everything, like that's a point when, you know, that I refer to now is like when I really started running after Jesus. Like, you know, when I talk about things, you know, that happened, you know, before that, I say that was when I wasn't really running after Jesus. And I just remember that, you know, when I really started, you know, fasting, when I really started, you know, digging into these things, you know, a lot of different things happened. You know, part of the, you know, just the sheer going through the Sermon on the Mount the way we did, like the word of the Lord, like came alive for me, you know, in a way that like, it just really hit my spirit. Like this is really like God speaking to us, you know, it wasn't just a book. I look back on that time, that transition, you know, very fondly, because I just, you know, I just remember it as like when my heart just, you know, really started coming alive in the Lord, and you know, everything was new to me. You know, the church background that I came from, you know, wasn't one that really believed like the Holy Spirit, you know, speaks to us, you know, and so, you know, that was new and awesome, and it just, you know, I'm just so thankful for that time that we did that, and just the impact that it's had, you know, on my life, because, you know, I, you know, before that, you know, the time that I wasn't really running after Jesus, like, I thought I was being a good Christian. Like, I thought I was doing what I was supposed to do. But I just, you know, it was kind of just that veil, you know, over my eyes that, like, what really being a Christian was about was, you know, I didn't have a concept of.
Yeah, and so that's really why we're going through it again, is we want to... this to be the foundation of our lives, you know, is living out these principles and living out in our everyday, how can I love Jesus in my relationships with other people? Not just in my quiet time when I'm reading the word and worshiping, but as I go about my life, how can I give him my all? And that's really how we do it with the Sermon on the Mount. So our next question, what have been the most difficult aspects for you personally, specifically from the Beatitudes, like the ones that are the most difficult to live out? And I can go first if you, because I have the, so for me, I think one of the hardest things, kind of like go together, it's the mercy and meekness, you know, and what I started to realize was, like, sometimes I can do the thing, you know, like if someone is, let's say they're being unkind, you know, and they're talking about me behind my back, or they're saying things about me that aren't true. In the moment when I have to face them, the mercy response would be, I'm going to be kind to them. You know, I'm going to bless my enemy. I'm going to be kind. I'm going to have mercy. And while I can do that, I've had enough practice. I've practiced this over the years. It's still difficult for me, but I've thought about it enough. I can do it in my mind and in my heart. I'm just defending myself and I'm justifying myself. And I'm just thinking, I just want to tell you off right now. I want to say all the things that are in my head and just because you deserve it. And I didn't deserve how you treated me. And so I think the hardest thing for me is I want those things to become who I am. You know, I want my first thought when this person is spewing at me, spewing all of their junk at me, I want my first thought to be mercy. And I want my first heart response to be meekness. You know, but what I've realized is I don't get there without practice. Like, that's not who I am. That's who Christ is. And he lives in me, but I have to keep crucifying myself. I have to keep in that moment choose. I am going to respond in meekness and mercy, even though I'm not feeling it. Now, Lord, change who I am from within, you know? So that was the thing. It was like, because it almost felt fake, but I really learned, like, fake it till you make it is totally biblical. You know, because he doesn't say, well, if you feel like having mercy, like if that's what you're thinking and that's how you feel, then have mercy. No, it's show mercy and then you will be shown mercy. Well, who I am is not merciful. you know? And so I have to choose. And the way that I do that is I stop and like when, especially if it's not in the moment, if it's in the moment, I try and be silent, you know? If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Control your facial expressions, you know, kind of thing. But what I'm trying to do is I want to think about how can I bless this person, kind of like was what Vina was saying. And the thing that the Lord convicted me about as I practiced this and as I've struggled with this is, you know what? They're my favorite just like you're my favorite. Like, I love them just as much as I love you. And I'm on their team as much as I'm on your team, even though they're the one in the wrong, because I'm in the wrong constantly. And then I start to realize, wow, I do the same thing, you know, and I've done the same thing, or I've had the same heart that they've had. And so then it's humbling to say, okay, maybe I can show them mercy because, Lord, you have shown me mercy. And so that's my struggle is I might be able to do it out outwardly, but I want it to become who I am inwardly. I want my first thought, my first heart response to be mercy and meekness, you know, and that comes with the years of practice and continuing to do it and continuing to lay my life down and submit myself to Christ and humble myself, you know, in front of others. So any other, what are some difficult ones for you?
Yeah, just kind of a general comment is I've found, especially when I was first trying to apply these principles, I was really discouraged because I wanted to see results and I was had a very hard time seeing any positive trends. It was mostly like, oh, I'm studying meekness and now great, I see all the ways that I'm prideful. Like, this is, how is this helping? So I think like the hardest thing for me is just, has been being patient with myself and just trusting the process of the Lord to work it, to work these Beatitudes in my life. And it really is, I found you don't notice it, you know, week by week or day by day. You notice it a couple years go by and then you look back at, wow, like I think I've grown in meekness. I'm more humble. So that's just the, I guess the most challenging part for me is just having the right perspective that these, the Lord's really in the big picture and our life as a whole, as opposed to day by day seeing these things grow. So,
I have a general one. I think I struggle with all of them because my perspective was like, you know, hunger and thirst. I was like, I'm so hungry right now and so thirsty, but it wasn't for God. It was like for food. And so I didn't understand, like, I'm being persecuted so much right now, but it wasn't for the Lord. And then I didn't know what meek was. I just thought it was like timid and shy. And then I was like, oh, it's submissive. Ooh. So then all of them, I think I didn't really quite understand the, hey, if you do this, then that. But it's more of like, hey, if you're doing it for my name's sake, and if you're doing it in for the kingdom, then you shall see it. Not like in your own or to, or if you're being persecuted, but it's because of your pride, then that's not really persecution. That's your pride. And so, in all of them, I think once we get the right perspective of what the Lord is trying to tell us, and we connect our hearts to the Lord and we actually carry it out, I think, like Luke said, you'll see it, but it's, again, it's over time and it's not instantaneous. And I think these are the ones that you live out your life, and it's like an attitude change, which takes time, especially if you convert and you've had like so many years of just doing it a certain way. I think the hardest thing is to go easy on yourself and not expect like an immediate return on investment, but it's a long-term type of thing.
I think what's, you know, I certainly struggle with several of them, but I think the one that is the most difficult for me, and believe me when I say, like, this is, I'm still really bad at it, like, really bad, is the one about blessed are the peacemakers, you know, because, you know, I thought I think a lot of us thought, you know, for a long time that even though it says peacemakers, it's kind of more like peacekeepers, you know. But when we dug into it and, you know, and looked at it, says peacemakers, you know, and talked about, you know, how like people who go into a situation where there's not peace and bring peace to it. I hate conflict. I abhor like conflict in like every form. You can ask my wife. I just like makes my skin crawl. Like the meme or whatever of Homer Simpson like disappearing into the hedges. Like that's me. That's me when like conflict like arrives on the scene and everything. And so it's a real struggle for me to first not run away, but you know, even more so to like insert myself you know, into the situation and bring peace to it. I wish I could say, you know, I've worked at this really hard and I've had these great successes. No, I'm still really bad at it. I still tend to run away. I'm working on it and asking the Lord to help and the Holy Spirit to help me. But that's definitely, but I want to see God. So I'm trying.
So our next question, what does it look like to have for you in your prayer life? Like, what is it? What is a prayer life? What does that mean? What does it look like for you?
Well, for me, I finally made like the real habit of my life several years ago to get up early and have that consistent time with the Lord in prayer and reading my Bible. And so that's kind of become the rhythm of my life. And that's been such a blessing just to have that every day, day in and day out. And as I've done that, I think I'm just learning more to pray more just throughout the day and thinking about these, about having a, you know, humility and having a pure heart and all that. Like, that's like a constant ongoing battle, I guess. Like, so I think I'm learning as I go about my day and, you know, I have a prideful thought or something that doesn't belong, just to immediately just say no. And that's my way of confessing and repenting and replacing it with a humble thought, or if I have a critical thought, just take it. It's so much, you know, taking those thoughts captive and replacing it just before the Lord, like, that's not how you want me to think. I'm going to think this, and choosing to think differently. Yeah, just as a habit. And the hard part is to catch it before it goes too far. I'm learning. And I think maybe that's where God is growing me, to catch those thoughts quicker and to correct them and line them up with truth and who God is and who his word is and what he wants for me. And I think I've experienced so much more freedom and joy and victory as I'm learning to do that every day, all day. Because we're going to have wrong thoughts constantly. Because, yeah, we are not this. Oh, my gosh, we're so far from this. And Jesus in us is this. And so we desperately need his grace and his power to live this out and his help.
I found it as kind of a, it'll look differently based on some of the different circumstances that you find in your life. So some of my history, like for a little while, I was a full-time intercessory missionary. So that allowed me to have a prayer life that looked a certain way, because obviously there's, I mean, prayer is like in the requirements of being a full-time intercessory missionary. It's like, that's 30 hours a week of your job is like, hey, try to reach for God these 30 hours. And that was just built into your schedule. And so like there was that was like kind of a, you get used to it and you kind of get sort of like wounded for that connection with the Lord. And so then whenever I transitioned out just back into like working as a truck driver on nights, it was like, it was a kind of a culture shock for a little while, but I found that like just trying to dial down like my commute to work and then just instead of listening to the radio, like in the truck when I would drive back and forth places at night, I found like instead of, you know, listening to music, if I would just sort of sing songs, I would sing in tongues like for 8 or 10 hours a day a lot of times, just because I was just trying to stay awake. And I found that like it really helped, and that's really what my prayer life looked like for a lot of years, probably for the past like 4 or 5 years, has been mostly unintelligible sort of praying, and it's just kind of been this sort of you know, mumbling reach to God that I don't understand the language. And then a lot of times in just worship sets, it's always, I try to sing real transparently, like in devotional sets that I take at the prayer room. I found that that's probably been like one of the, my favorite places of prayer has been in devotional song, where you kind of start by sort of trying to get the cobwebs out by just sort of sing familiar music that you're used to, you know, pick the easy, well-worn pass, like pick that Yes, I Will song, man, sing that one like 10 weeks in a row until it gets worn out. Then, you know, pick up some other song that, you know, you've had really good encounters with and the Lord, there's nothing cheesy about that. That's just wisdom. Start out with some of those kind of things, get sort of the cobwebs out, and then just try to like get a melody going where you really start to sing out the emotions of what is going on, like on the inside, either from that week, either that day, maybe the day before. But I've just found so many answers to like the emotions that I face by singing them to the Lord and getting perspective based on the song that sort of starts to come out.
90% of the time, my prayer life's like, Lord, put your sister down. And then, like, Lord, just. And then I take Brad's approach. I just help. Just a lot of help. And then, so that's it. That's my prayer life. But the 10% of the time where it's like, because I just don't wake up early. I can't wake up early. And I barely make it to church on time. But on that occasion that I have, like, no kids and I'm in the prayer room, it does take me a lot to get settled in knowing that I don't have children so I can focus. A really good book that I that catapults me into it is by Ruth Simmons. And it's called Grace Laced. It's just like one page, but the Lord seems to encounter you. And that's the thing. It's like if your heart wills for that prayer life and he knows, like, I'm wanting to have a good relationship with him, he uses those little bits of just breather room and reminds me in the spirit. And then I pray, especially when he puts, like, anyone in this room on my mind, I just, Lord, help them. And my prayers are super short, but I think it's in the moaning and in the crying and in the words in your inner spirit that the Lord knows what that means. And I think, like, you know, if you have the gifts of tongue, like, I want it, but it's what, because I understand it, because it's like there's so much that goes into that word, and like there's so much, like, I think when babies cry, they're saying so much, but you're looking at them like, what? But the Lord knows our cries and our what we need. And so whatever your prayer life looks like, it doesn't have to be like sanctified. I think just stirring whatever you're cooking and saying, help, Lord, like, helps a lot.
So the next question, can you give us some practical points on what fasting can look like?
I think the first thing is try. You know, you know, is, you know, fasting is just like anything else, you know, that we try in our life. We're not going to be good at it, you know, the first time, the first few times, the first dozen times. But it's important that you try and learn those lessons. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I think of it, you know, like, you know, my children, you know, learning to walk, you know, the first few times that they try to, you know, stand up, you know, on the couch or whatever, they're going to fall over and get hurt and cry. And the same thing's going to happen, you know, with fasting. Like, and I say this and there's all these giggles and smiles around for those of you who don't know, because I did this like, you know, back when we were talking about, you know, when I was 19, 20, 21 and, you know, and we were learning about fasting and I was like, all right, well, I'm going to fast. And I did a lot of silly things and a lot of interesting things. And I learned a lot. And I think that's important. It's important to try, make the mistakes, learn, you know, do better next time and move on. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Fast something that you like. So I wouldn't fast like raw broccoli because I wouldn't eat it and it would be super easy. Just something that you know that is a something that you like to eat. Or, I mean, you can even start off like where you eat really bland or simple foods just because you're getting kicked off on or kickoff? That's football. Okay. In any case, here. Whatever. Someone.
So I think the recap on that was try. And try with things that it would actually be a stretch, a reach for you. It would be hard. It would be a sacrifice. It's a sacrifice of, Lord, I'm going to give this because I want more of you. We're just going to go ahead and move on to our last question here. Do any of you, and I'm so thankful that Julian shared, have you been challenged in any way in the area of giving? Do you have any stories of, you know, details that would help us in, as we kind of, you know, try and give and yeah.
I've got, I'll share a good one and a bad one. But I'll share the bad one first so that you end on a good note. So we would do when I was a missionary, we tried to do it like George Mueller style. I think he was that guy who never asked for money and stuff like that. And it worked like for years. We had so many cool financial stories. And we were going into that season of pruning several years ago. And we were feeling the pinch financially, and I remember hearing a message by Stuart Greaves about how, like, when he'd feel the pinch, he'd just, like, give his whole paycheck away or something like that, and the Lord would, like, give it back and it would come through or whatever. I was like, man, we're going to do this. We're going to faith this thing. We're going to overcome. We're going to fight these bills, you know, with the power of this whole paycheck and a bunch of intercession. And, you know, I'm just got all this history and these stories you know, in my back pocket. And so we give our whole paycheck away. And then we totally didn't have any money. And I had to sell a bunch of stuff to pay, like, the bills. And it was, like, really stressful. And I was just like, Lord, what happened? What in the world went wrong? I'm not even going to talk about what we talked about. But yeah, so that was one that didn't work. But there is another, this is a few years later after we were like actually working. I remember I had this camping chair that was like just sitting on the front porch. And I was mad that somebody just didn't take it back inside. And I was like, I am not going to take this back inside. I feel like I pick up the yard every time. I was like, I I'm putting my foot down. I work nights. I'm tired. I'm not bringing this inside. I was like, Lord, just put money in this chair. And so for like 6 months, you know, I'd get home at like 5 a.m. I'd groggy, just kind of walk by my chair and just like, put money in that chair, you know, and like walk inside and fall asleep. And then one day, I think we had like gone out to eat on a Friday, and we came back home, and the chair looked like it had been moved. And I was like, who moved the chair? Like, what happened, you know? So we go, and I go to pick up the chair and take it inside, and there was like $10,000 in the chair that somebody put in the chair. I was like, holy cow. And so that was a part of a story. Like, we had had something like $10,000 or $12,000 in debt, and I just kept feeling like the Lord was like, hey, just keep paying the minimum payment. I'm going to take care of your debt. Like, don't try to work yourself into paying off this debt. I'm the one who got you into the debt. Just live with it. Give the $150 away in interest. I'm going to take care of it. And I just remember it was so hard to, like, believe that word, because well-meaning people would tell me, you got to get out of debt. You got to do this stuff. You got to do this stuff. But I just, every time I'd go to the Lord, he'd say, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to take care of you. Believe me. And it was about 3 years or so of just kind of waiting on it. And then like $10,000, and then like another $2,000 came in, and just overnight, $12,000 in debt just went away. And so all that to say, you have to keep going with the process. You have to commit yourself. I'm going to have a history of stories. I'm going to have a history of seeing God break through. And I'm going to have awesome seasons where it seems like God just opens up, you know, the fire hydrant on the street. And I'm going to have seasons where it seems like I'm waiting, and it seems like it's kind of barren, and like the provision, it actually comes from sort of tightening the belt and maybe eating less. And but both of those are part of the process, and you have to take the good with the bad. But if you will commit to it, you will see some awesome stories.
I think so. Certainly have, you know, similar situation to what Luke just talked about. You know, been some successes and some things that didn't go the way that we thought. And I think the challenge is, you know, to walk away from the things that didn't go the way you thought they would, and still be able to stir up your heart and stir up your faith the next time. Several years ago, we were in a situation where we had two cars, but both of them were kind of on the small side, and our family was growing. We were talking about, you know, moving into something bigger, and we felt like the Lord, you know, spoke to us really clearly about giving one of our cars away to some friends that, you know, really needed one. And so we were like, you know, we were so excited. You know, if you've been around the community for a while, you know, we've got lots. Luke has a ton of stories of, you know, just Lord giving vehicles and everything. And we're like, yes, this is it. The Lord's, you know, going to give us one of those awesome, you know, giving us a vehicle, you know, stories. And so we gave the one car, you know, to our friends and everything. And that was it. The Lord didn't provide anything, and we were down to one car for, you know, a couple years with our family. And so I was working in Dallas at the time, so I had to have the car to drive to work. So my poor wife was stuck at the house with the boys all day. And it was a tough season, and it was a struggle, and we kind of, you know, had the same thing, like, Lord, what went wrong? What happened? And but the Lord is good, and the Lord is faithful, and still, even when things don't go the way you think they will, and you just got to remember that you have to hold on to that truth, that the Lord is faithful, and the Lord is good, and he is a good father, and he does desire to do good things for his children. And you have to, the challenge is reminding yourself of that and remembering that the next time.
Yeah, a funny story that hopefully will encourage you guys to give off of these two fellas. I know the best way is just to give, because
we have good stories too.
I take it into mind or concept of that verse, like, there cannot be a love of money and the love of God. So I stopped praying the prayer because I was like, Lord, remind me not to love money. But every time he does that, I give away money. And I know there's this running joke between Andy and I, if we get someone just randomly gives us money, we're like, oh yeah. And we go to encounter services, we're like, we're keeping the money at home, because every time it does not fail. Every time I accidentally bring the cash, and then Brad says something, I'm like, there it goes. My new pair of shoes is gone. And there was a time where I get to see fun things with Luke Fredenberg at the prayer room when we count money. And then one time Luke opened, he was like, oh man, this is awesome. Look at this for someone other than Andy Sanchez. And I'm like, great. And then I see one, it has Andy Sanchez. I'm like, dude, we just got some money. And then I looked, I was like, dude, Andy's giving away money. And I'm like, and Andy walks by, I was like, we need to talk. What are you doing? And so he goes, Brad taught. I was like, of course Brad taught about giving away. But it's good, because it's like my right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing, and gave away some money. But then the Lord blesses us, and it doesn't always have to be like monetary, because I see whenever someone gives us things or pays for things, or my lost sister blesses us and spoils us, or people give us gift cards and things. I see that as the Lord is still providing, just in different ways. And it may not be cash, but it could be through friends, through community, through, gift cards, through health. Like, praise the Lord. I thought my child was going to have tons of cavities, but she was all clear. And I was like, thank you, because teeth are so expensive. And we got four children. I'm like, whoa. But the exercising of giving away, I feel the bigger return is to kill your love of money and to kill the selfishness of you wanting it and hoarding it all. And I know, like, whenever I feel the Lord tugging on my heart in that regard, it's probably because my love for money is like nearing the gap of where I should love the Lord and trust and fall on him for provision, for the things that I need. And so I just say, whatever you have, like, start off, like, just like fasting, start off small. Like, instead of my cup of coffee or something like that, or a meal or something, and you'll feel that release. And I think the other benefit is when you see that it blesses that person, and you see their reaction, even in secret, because you know you gave it to them, but they don't. And then you hear their story getting retold and how happy they are. Like, that does something inside of you that just makes you want to continue on and ask the Lord, yeah, give me that money so I can continue to bless others. And so.
So I hope some of this today, at some point, the Lord tugged your heart or gave you some encouragement as you go out your life. I think the biggest thing in all of this is we want a story with Christ, right? We want to walk in closeness with him. And when we pray more and we ask him more questions, he speaks to us more. He answers us more. You know, when we give more, he gives more. When we fast more, we get more of his presence. When we participate in the Beatitudes and we choose, I'm going to lay my life down, I decrease and he increases, you know. And so in all of these things, like, I want to do this more because I want more living stories with God. I want more friendship with Christ. And that's really why we do it. We want to be friends with Christ. We want to walk in closeness with him. And so take one of these areas. If the Lord is putting an area on your heart, and that he wants to stretch you, that he wants you to step out in faith, do it. And he will write a story with you. And it's the most exciting thing in life is when we talk to God, we ask him questions, and he begins to answer and write, and we see the story that he's writing. And so I challenge you to do that this week. Thank you so much, guys, for being here. The kids did great. And so thank you guys so much.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.